welcome to the Terminal Velocity Comic Book Podcast, or I guess we're going back to Terminal Velocity Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Andrew.
And I'm Scott.
And each and every week, well, not exactly every week after this break that we took, but
mini hiatus. Typically,
each and every week we'll get together and talk about a story, a comic storyline from present, past, sometimes future, but primarily the past. Where we'll kind of do a kind of a deep dive on story and what we think about it and how it kind of reflects to, you know, how it kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? How you interpret it in kind of like, in modern context. And then also we'll dive into our pick of the week, where we talk about the books that released the week of. And, sometimes there's some specials, like we have our X Mansion, which are we going to go into that one this week?
I think we might end up tying it in with the last section, but yeah, we'll probably take a trip into Westchester.
You've heard it here first. X Mansion's canceled. but I do think we're going to have some interesting thoughts on the latest, I guess it's mm-hmm. last two issues we kind of have to lump in. One, yes. I would say was kind of maybe forgettable, but it didn't really blow our minds. And then there's the latest issue where we really got to talk about some stuff there. Yes. But first off, we're going to talk about our pick this week for our main topic, which is going to be Daredevil Guardian Devil, which was written by Kevin Smith and drawn by Joe Quesada, and it was inks and colors by Jimmy Palmiotti.
Yep.
And this is kind of, I don't think this book launched Marvel Knights, but it's pretty much the one that most people think of when they think of Marvel Knights when it launched. And it was kind of, in a way, a rebirth for Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
It was the start of a brand new series. And it would be Kevin Smith's kind of big explosion on the scene of the comics world as a writer. I guess we'll dive into this one. Do you want to do beat for beat with the story in this one, or?
No, I don't think so. I think we can go pretty quickly through it because it's actually a fairly simple and linear story once the twist is revealed.
Yes.
There's a good couple issues in there that I thought, you know, it could have been trimmed down a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad we said that this was Kevin Smith's first foray really into at least mainstream comics. I don't know if he did anything before that in some of the smaller titles. But you can tell that this was somebody who hadn't written comics before because there's a lot on every page.
You know how I feel about data pages?
Yeah, this is
a lot of, there's like the back in the day, it wasn't a data page, it's a letter.
Mm-hmm.
It's Karen Page's letters to Matt Murdock. And though I appreciate the content and context of what is being written, you literally get the full letter
that she wrote there. And I won't lie to you, I glazed off on a few of those and didn't continue reading the letters.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at like even like the first couple panels, which it's got this kind of unique three panel page, but they're like vertical towers,
mm-hmm.
and it's mostly text.
Yes.
And, you know, someone picking this up now might be like, whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot. And I know we've talked about other comics that have had just a lot of content, a lot of prose in them. I'm thinking back to like the Crisis on Infinite stuff.
Yes.
Those had a lot. And this is kind of on par with that, where I think this is only 180 pages, but it feels like you're pushing 300.
Yes, definitely. Going back to this and reading it, because I did read it back in the day, and I'll straight up say that I still did enjoy this storyline.
Mm-hmm.
It's solid Daredevil, and I think it's only eclipsed really by what follows it with Bendis, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, everyone was thinking, can this Bendis guy kind of live up to what Kevin Smith set up here in these first like 8 issues? And well, we'll eventually dive into that run, but this was pretty good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the basic premise is, you know, if you know anything about Daredevil, it's very much steeped in his Catholic guilt. And I think that this is kind of picking up threads from Frank Miller's Born Again, and which we haven't covered on the show yet. not for the lack of trying, but
yeah, we'll get back to it.
we tried one week and it just didn't work pan out. So mm-hmm. Talk about dense. So the story picks up with a letter from Karen Page, and you know, I'm literally not gonna go in deep and dive into this, but it's basically talking about their relationship and, you know, how they, why they fell apart, and
it's a Dear John letter.
Yeah, basically, she's basically dumped Matt, and is explaining why, because that's what everyone wants to hear. And then we cut to a scene where it's a dark, mysterious figure is walking into a hospital, and sad to say, a whole infant ward goes up in flames, and I forget if it even says, but pretty much every baby but one is sadly killed. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's pretty dark stuff right out the gate. But what do you expect for Daredevil, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the context. Like, I guess Born Again kind of set that tone for like Daredevil stories to be kind of gritty. So I guess that's where it's coming from. But skipping ahead, we have a young girl named Gwyneth who's running, cradling a young infant, and she's running for her life. She's being chased by some kind of like mafia type looking guys. All the while, Matt Murdock is looking for solace from his confession at the Catholic Church. And as soon as he starts to get into it, he kind of can't not hear, I guess, heartbeats and all the noises and things that surround him. So he gives up on his own confession while the priest is guidance, I guess, he's providing. Mm-hmm. And suits up as Daredevil to jump into action. What would you say about the art style so far, Scott?
I am a big fan of Quesada's art. I think it's really awesome. I love the way that it's inked. I love the way that it's colored. Him and Palmiotti obviously are really strong together. But yeah, I totally dig his art style. I think it really, really works. Some of the anatomy is a little wonky. And I don't mean just like overly cartoonish. It's genuinely just, he's got a very strange style with some of the bodies. Mm-hmm. But I really liked his art style. What did you think?
I actually loved it in this. When it goes to One More Day, I hated it.
And but is that the association with the storyline or the actual art?
No, I actually just did not like the artwork in that storyline either. Okay. Like, I just thought I think it felt rushed. I felt like it didn't have the heart and soul that this has.
Mm-hmm.
Like the painstaking details, the use of shadow, like everything was by design. Like One More Day, like it was almost like a parody of his own work.
Right.
And I mean, it's to each their own opinion, but that's how that that made me feel about that. And his people just look better in this than they looked in One More Day. I felt that the parts where you were saying the anatomy and everything was strange, in that book it was really strange. But we're talking about this book. So so Matt returns to his law office because he failed to save the girl. She disappeared, but he stopped the guys that were chasing her. And as he's kind of, there's a couple things that are threaded here. So we're introduced to Foggy, who's dealing with a new client or potential client who's a divorcee. And even Matt can tell that Foggy's kind of taking an interest in this girl.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that Foggy's currently dating Liz Osborne. So
yeah,
you can see,
he's
you
into
see
her, she's into him. So yeah, this is going to end badly for Foggy.
And it's funny because you're used to Matt Murdock being the one involved in this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like he is now. So you know, we get kind of glimpses at the mastermind who's completely steeped in shadow. The only way this story works is if you don't see anything of the people until the reveal is to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the goons that where he was working for him, he dispatched of through an elaborate death trap, which frankly is kind of the first hint as to who the villain is, but only in retrospect.
Yeah, only in retrospect. I mean, and it could be any villain, really. There's a couple different ones that it could be. But yeah, once you've read the entire story and you see who the big reveal is, and then you go back and read this, you're like, okay, some of these things were fairly obvious.
Yeah. I just to go back to the Quesada art, I also liked how he did the billy clubs and how they're just kind of like wildly all over the place, but somehow, like Captain America's shield, hit its target.
Yeah, they defy all physics. But they still do it, and they've got the webbing feel to them, like mm-hmm. as much like the spaghetti webbing that Spider-Man has now, thanks to Todd McFarlane and that kind of thing. A lot of the Billy Club with the ropes and things on them are all, I think, tied back to this kind of art style.
Yeah. So you know, you get typical stuff: Daredevil foils, a mugging, slash whatever. We cut back to the girl, and we're getting more insight as to what's going on with her, is that she's kind of a 16-year-old girl who believes that she gave birth to the baby, but she was a virgin, and she believes that it's an immaculate birth, as she has received visions from angels, and they kind of tell her what she's got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the angels told her that Matt Murdock, Daredevil, is the one to protect her, and apparently reveals his secret identity to her. Very careless angels.
Yeah, they are the loose lips.
So this 16-year-old girl, based on her the information she received from the angels, essentially just drops the baby into his arms and bolts.
Yeah. And now I don't remember, but we never...
They do resolve it.
See her again.
Yeah, no, we don't. But there's a line that just says what happened to her.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, fine. Spoilers. It's revealed that she was killed and buried away somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a little weird too, that she just kind of vanishes. Like you see her one more time before that happens, but it's pretty cold. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of savage stuff in this story. But so she drops the kid off and basically tells Matt that he's the that he's the new, he's essentially Christ reborn.
Mm-hmm.
And is being left in the devil's care, as the kind of the line puts it. So Matt seeks out the advice from his former love interest, because Matt tends to have a long trail of women that he's been involved with. In this case, it's Natasha Romanoff, the Black Widow. And actually, do you want to take it from here?
Sure. So in the previous issues, because he was dealing with the whole Karen thing, and what he likes to do whenever he's got his heart broken is to revisit old flames. So he was going to try and call Natasha, and then ended up hanging up the phone before it ever actually connected and dialed through. But her being who she is, she knows when somebody's even thought about calling her, I guess, in that kind of respect. So she ends up paying him a visit, sees him with this baby, and kind of asks him what the hell is going on. He gives her a bit of the story of what the lowdown is, and rather chauvinistically just kind of hands the baby to her and says, okay, you know what to do with this thing. And then he takes off.
There's two parts that I laughed at in this scene. One is that she thinks he's wanting the booty call.
Yeah.
And she's like, ready. She's like, scolds him for it, but then is down for it. And then he's like, yeah, take the baby. And she's like, what? And then she's like, good God, I was an Avenger.
So, yeah, exactly. She was all down for the booty call. So anyway, then it flashes over to him working in his law office, trying to dig up a few more details on the girl and the baby and really what's going on. And this is when the shadowy figure from before kind of or a shadowy figure presents themselves, and he kind of lets Daredevil in on the fact that, no, this isn't the Christ reborn. This is the Antichrist, basically. And you basically tells him that, like, okay, now your life is going to start falling apart. Anybody that comes in contact with this thing, much like Karen Page, bad things start to happen to them. And I've just lost all my pages on Comixology.
Basically, he hands him a little crucifix type medal, and tells him, look, you gotta, I know it's hard, but basically this thing's an abomination, and it's like, I wouldn't expect you to kill it, but you gotta bring the baby to me, and my organization will deal with it.
Yeah.
It's an important scene that he's holding this crucifix, as it will come back later. Mm-hmm. But then we get the plot B going on, where, you know, Foggy Nelson pops by to see Matt because he needs to borrow his credit card, because he's got to wine and dine their new prospective client. Because that's not going to go terribly. So Matt is wandering the streets, lost in thought, when he's careless enough and a mugger thinks he's an easy target, gets the drop on him, but only for a moment. And Daredevil, as Matt Murdock, basically kicks the living crap out of him. So much so with even a flying, leaping kick, mm-hmm. to the point that bystanders witness and they're like, what's that lawyer, or what's that guy in a suit mugging, mugging that guy? So he's like, oh yeah, I forgot I'm Matt Murdock right now. So he bolts, and we cut back to Gwyneth or Gwendolyn. I can't remember which.
Gwyneth.
And her luck has run out, and the associates of our mysterious figure have caught up to her. They throw her in the back of a car, and they declare the chase is ended. And that's literally the last time we see her.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they could have done he could have done a little more with that plot subplot, or at least handled the resolution of it, because it's basically a throwaway line at near the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But we cut back to a rooftop where Matt and Natasha are meeting on the roof, discussing things, and Matt's pretty much telling her, you know what, it's basically we've got to deal with this only one way, because this kid's evil. And he literally takes the baby from her and hoists it over his head and chucks it off a building, which is it's a very shocking moment, like, especially for Daredevil. And Natasha can't believe what's happening. She leaps off the building and catches the infant and grapples away, or grapples to the building and climbs up, but Matt actually doesn't try to help her. He just stands there watching very strangely. A minor little fight ensues where Natasha basically tells Matt, like, what the F is wrong with you here? Like, you've lost your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so she takes the baby and says, go get your head straight. You're not acting yourself. We cut to subplot B with Foggy Nelson, who's now returning from dinner with the prospective client, where she makes some moves and pulls him into her hotel room. Or I guess it's her house, I guess.
Yep.
I couldn't tell. I guess it's like a brownstone.
Yeah, her apartment or whatever.
Yeah. So guess that you mean you could see where that's probably going to go. Then we cut back to Matt, who's kind of wallowing in Catholic guilt and confusion, and he's kind of just staring at the little metal cross, gold cross, and just not really understanding like what the hell's going on with him. When he gets a knock at the door, and Karen Page has returned to his life. And this is where we get a big shocking reveal that Karen is, she discovers that she has AIDS. How did you feel about this part, Scott?
Yeah, I thought that this one was kind of, it was cheap shock, to be honest, is what I thought. And I was a little surprised at the time that they would make somebody so important to Daredevil have AIDS. Kind of makes sense that a real world problem like that would happen given her history and everything that's been on the go, and they kind of talk about that later on. It felt like shock for shock's sake at the time when I was reading it.
And it's funny, his other, I couldn't remember with Green Arrow, he invented a character named Speedy, like a new Speedy that was a child prostitute. And it was later revealed that she had HIV, and I, for the life of me, can't remember if it was Kevin Smith that introduced that concept or Brad Meltzer. But it was a character he created, so I think that he introduced that concept. So yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like this weird thing in comics, right? Because on one hand, it's down to earth, like grounded reality. But then you have the Sorcerer Supreme and all this fantastical stuff that couldn't they really fix this issue?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like it's kind of like also like why One More Day didn't work is that like Spider-Man went around the Marvel Universe talking to all his allies and they couldn't fix a gunshot wound. It was just Aunt May's time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, really? But yeah, anyways, so yeah, she lays that bombshell on Matt, also returning to his life after having Dear Johned him. And you could take it from here if you like.
Yep. Okay. So the next issue kicks off really with Foggy kind of telling the story of he's been arrested and he's kind of filling Matt in on the story of what happened that night after he got pulled into the woman's room. And basically what happened is started with a kiss, ended with her after they've had sex, ends with her turning into some kind of demonic thing, scratching his face and jumping out the window and killing herself. Except when he looks out the window, it's actually her regular body. It's not a demon that jumped out and died. So there's some weird shit that's on the go there. Obviously, Matt has been hired as his lawyer to look after him because Nelson Murdoch, and I can't remember what the other name on the door is at the time.
Sharp, I believe.
Sharp, that's it. Are obviously the law firm. And Matt goes back to his office and is talking to Foggy's mom about the whole case. She's Sharp in the title. And she's basically telling him to distance himself and to not touch the case. They have a big falling out about things, and he ends up basically quitting the law firm. At the same time, we've got Karen Page being visited by somebody, and that somebody is the little mustachioed guy, to tell her all the story of kind of what the deal is with this baby and the kind of what he needs her to do, because he knows that Matt won't be capable of it, but maybe she can, she, all of her problems, all of the AIDS and whatnot, will be quickly healed if actually she ends up handing over the baby, and then some kind of spiritual restitution will heal her, I guess, is really what's kind of on the go here. So then what we end up seeing is Matt or sorry, Daredevil ends up getting kind of kidnapped at one point and locked in this strange room. And again, this is another one of these, okay, we should have started to see kind of who was behind all of this at this point. But it's basically this deafening choir of angels is singing in the room. And it's at such a high frequency that normal people won't be hearing it too much, but actually it's basically crippling him. And it's at this point that this, again, another kind of giant monster demon type guy walks in the room and starts monologuing about how they need Daredevil and his help with the child and all of this kind of stuff. But while he's kind of going on, Matt is figuring out that, okay, the sound that he's hearing is actually a recording. And there's the briefest of seconds of milliseconds between the recording ending and starting up again. Mm-hmm. And that's when he gets his billy club out, busts the speaker, and just beats the hell out of this giant demon guy before he jumps out and kind of saves himself.
Yeah, this demon guy, he kind of reminds me of that Kandor guy that was running around during the Electric Superman storyline.
I'm glad you said that, because I was just about to. I can't remember what that guy's name is.
I have no idea what his name is, but he just looks exactly the same.
Yeah, the hair that looks kind of like the horns that the guy had, but the face with all the lines on it. Yeah, it's nice. This is
quite possibly published around the same time.
Yes, I was just about to say that too. It's around that same time. And so after Matt jumps out the window, he actually lands in traffic and ends up getting hit by a truck.
Was he hit by it? I thought Black Widow saved him at the last second. Like the issue ends with the truck barreling on him. And then it cuts up to the next scene, and Black Widow it's explained that she saved him at the last second.
Yeah, just narrowly saved him. And she's quite irresponsibly got the baby in a backpack, basically.
I was thinking that the whole time, too.
The pouring rain.
I guess she's just swinging around the city the whole time.
She's just kind of swinging with the baby on her back. Complete disregard for this newborn, who seems to be a toddler, maybe around 3 to 6 months. And now in the story somehow, because it's holding its head up really, really well. But anyway, she's got this thing, and her and Matt start to have this conversation, and she's kind of asking him have you got your shit together and your head on straight? And it's at this point that him and her basically get into a fight, and he breaks her leg.
Or at least seriously wounds it.
Very seriously sprains it, and ends up taking the baby and then holding it and jumping off the roof himself to kind of kill the two of them. But it's at this point that Catholic guilt really kicks in. And of course, because he's close to a church, he throws his billy club. It catches onto a giant cross on the top of the church, swings in at the front door, and he goes to see his mom.
The stone crucifixes are very sturdy.
They're extremely strong. So basically what ends up happening here is he's now sitting with his mom. He's talking to her about the baby, and he starts to get a little uppity with her, and she just smacks him across the face.
Yep.
Really smacking some sense into him. But it's at this point as well where it's in the next kind of part. So Karen Page also shows up at the church. Him and her have a conversation about the baby. She reveals the fact that the mustachioed guy came to visit her, and she wants the baby now so that they can get rid of both their problems. Matt's starting to piece together that, you know, the baby might not actually be really what's at the center of all of their problems. Kind of tells her she's got her own issue because of her past history, because she was a junkie, because she slept around, because she did all these terrible things. So basically she's got nobody to blame but herself. It's not anything to do with a baby.
Matt's got a lot of rage towards women in his life.
He does. I mean, he treats them like shit and then is surprised when they kind of bite back and then gets pissed off at them when they do. He's a complicated guy. We cut back to now it's revealed that the guy that we've been seeing in various different cutscenes that's in the shadows all the time is our mustachioed man.
Yeah, so he's looking rather sinister now.
He's looking extremely sinister, and he's talking to somebody, and that somebody flicks a paperclip, and it ends up bouncing off a couple things and then catching in a book, The Catcher in the Rye, which, as we know, is a famous book because the guy that tried to shoot, I think it was Reagan, was reading that book, and it's associated with a whole bunch of stuff. And lo and behold, Bullseye is catching up on some of his reading. So he's being hired by the mustachioed man to take out anybody in the church that is between him and basically getting the baby. That's ultimately what he's going to be hired for. The next issue actually picks up with Daredevil going to visit Doctor Strange to ask him kind of what is on the go with this baby. Could it potentially be true? There's some of these strange artifacts that I've had, like this little crucifix. Do they hold any power or anything? And Doctor Strange basically tells him no. If there was going to be an Antichrist or the Christ reborn, I'm pretty sure I would have sensed it in the way that the mystical energies would work. And actually the thing that you've been holding on to is actually just been poisoned, and you're hallucinating because of the drugs that were
with time release actions.
Yes, time release and hormonal implications to it. So anytime anybody tried to mention the baby, it was meant to trigger his kind of paranoid response. So they end up having that conversation. And for some reason, because they really need to figure out whether this baby is the Antichrist or not, they decide to summon Mephisto.
Because it's the only way for them to figure that out.
Yeah. Now, I wasn't a big fan of this issue or this moment, but I did kind of prefer this design of Mephisto a little bit to the other versions that we end up getting, where he just basically looks like a vampire in a red cloak. Like in this one, he actually looks like a demon and a monster and that kind of thing. So I kind of appreciated that.
Which also threw me off too, because it's like, I'm so used to that Neron.
Yeah.
Like red haired vampire jester looking design. But in between that, we get a nice several pages of what I like to call analog data pages, which is just Karen writing in the letter again. But one of the hints that we get in this is we see like a flapping newspaper, and it shows like a one-time creature feature king John Curtin found murdered in Hollywood, and it's a picture of the old man we've been seeing interacting with Matt and Karen.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? The first time I read it, I didn't even pay attention to that because it was the letters pages. I think I just glazed over these two.
Yes, it was very hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Not all is what it seems.
No. So Daredevil and Doctor Strange end up kind of talking to Mephisto and finding out that no, in fact, this baby is just a regular baby. There's nothing on the go with him. And so Matt goes running and he heads to the church, and inside the church is a complete and utter massacre.
Yeah, it's horrible.
People with forks sticking out of them. Just and absolutely anything and everything is turned into a deadly weapon.
Even teeth.
So this is when Bullseye kind of shows himself, and him and Matt end up having a good fight. And Bullseye recognizes the fact that he probably isn't going to be able to beat him. So he actually uses a gun and wounds Daredevil to get the upper hand so that he can actually best him in an actual fight. And then the big conclusion to this fight is Karen ends up handing over the baby, and he ends up stealing the baby from Karen and Matt's mom, and then throwing the billy club, and it actually stabs Karen straight through the heart. And yes. She ends up dying, and that's how that one issue ends. Now, that was actually a really cool fight sequence. Mm-hmm. All those pages were really, really cool with him and Bullseye fighting. And then Karen, I haven't been a huge Daredevil fan, so her dying didn't mean much to me at the time.
Well, I was curious what your thoughts would be, because Karen Page is basically Daredevil's Gwen Stacy, she or Mary Jane, like it's like the love of his life.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, like she started out like in the books, I think, as his secretary at his law firm, and they grew into a relationship. So it's like between her and Elektra, he's had some very bad luck.
he hasn't made great choices in partners.
And Bullseye has taken both of them out.
Yes.
Yeah, like, and it's dark. It's been, this scene has pretty much been done in a lot of Daredevil media. They changed like who the victim is in various incarnations of it, but it's a very iconic moment. I was just thinking, like they've never brought her back.
No, I don't think they have.
Yet.
Yeah.
Because, like, Barry Allen came back, so, like, no reason not to bring Karen Page back at some point.
That's very true. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, I think she's still dead in the Marvel universe. Okay.
I guess she's the new Barry Allen.
she's the Uncle Ben.
Because it was 98, like, so she's kind of been gone for a while.
Yeah, at least Uncle Ben's still dead.
they've brought him back in weird ways too.
Kind of, yeah, in roundabout ways. So the next issue is kind of the ultimate reveal issue. So it starts off with Daredevil really trashing his own apartment because he's just so grief-stricken. Makes a mess of everything and then goes out on the town to figure out, okay, who's pulling the strings behind all of this. So he goes to a bar, ends up beating the hell out of some people in the bar, hanging a guy off a building.
He goes full Batman.
Yes, he goes full Batman here, and then finds out where the mustachioed little bald man is staying, and decides to bust into the building and ends up taking out. And this is where you start to find out that, okay, there's a lot of people in costumes, but these aren't the people you think they are. He fights some people dressed as the Hand, but they're not actually trained in any way. He can hear them breathing too heavy. He can hear all of their movements. So he knows these people are not actually the Hand. Mm-hmm. Ends up going into an elevator, which turns into kind of a trip through hell type of moment. Where they're pulling at his costume and he can grab at them and he realizes that he can actually pull some cloth off them. This is when he runs into this demon thing again, from the previous issue where the choir of angels were singing, and he and this demon end up fighting a whole bunch of guards, before Matt actually decides to take the big demon guy out. And this is when you find out that it was actually just a guy in a suit, a guy in a big robotic suit. And it's at this point that there starts to get a lot more smoke and mist starts coming off of a few different things. And
what
Matt,
could that be?
And Matt is slowly piecing things together. And the old man slowly pulls his mask off, gets his proper costume on. And this is when it's revealed that the true mastermind behind all of Matt's current woes has actually been Mysterio. And this was really cool because Daredevil and Mysterio don't cross paths.
Bubblehead?
Yeah. They don't cross paths all that often. So this was like a really cool kind of moment where you get the idea that, you know, Mysterio isn't just, he isn't as, you know, laughable as some of the other villains might seem to be, or as he should be with a giant fishbowl on his head. He actually does have some threatening menace to him. Do you want to take over kind of this last issue?
Yeah, so like basically it's a whole issue of basically Mysterio explaining the plot to you.
Yeah, this is your catch-up issue.
So he basically tells Matt why he targeted him. And well, basically he finds out that he's got terminal illnesses due to all of the experimental special effects and chemicals and things that he worked with. So he wants to kind of make one final grand show that he's not a total loser. But he, because of what was going on in the Spider-Man books, you know, like, it wasn't his Spider-Man, it was the Scarlet Spider, and then the, well, as we know, the Ben Reilly Spider-Man, and conveniently Mysterio refers to him as a clone. Nudge, nudge, right? So basically he decides to go for this, you know, next best thing. Daredevil, he felt like it was comparable to dealing with Spider-Man. So he basically pays the Kingpin $1 million and gains all the information on Daredevil, which is a jump, is a big logic jump in some ways. Like he just conveniently happened to go to Kingpin, who conveniently happened to know everything about Daredevil. So it can make Mysterio's plan so fully complete.
Well, by this point, like, Fisk has pulled apart Matt Murdock's life piece by piece.
Yeah, no, and I'm not challenging that he knows that stuff, but the fact that he, like, was going to Fisk in the first place, and just so happens that Fisk has all this information on him.
Right. Okay.
So for years, as I guess as he's dying, he built up this plan to kind of destroy Matt Murdock's life and destroy it piece by piece in one grand final conclusion, which then he also lets us know and shows him pretty much killing anybody who knows any of the inside information. So Matt's secret is safe for now. But then Matt pretty much just takes him out and it's just like, you're kind of pathetic. Like, I'm not gonna, you thought you could beat me this way, but you have it, had it all wrong. And Mysterio's just like, kill me. And he's like, nah. He just leaves him to wallow. Mm-hmm. And so Mysterio has one final MacGuffin up his sleeve, and he basically says that he's like, because I stole this one too from Kraven, and then blows his brains out. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So the reason why Matt was listening to him this whole time, because we kind of glazed over that, was that the infant was still alive, but he only had 13 minutes to live. So he basically said, if you listen to me, I'll show you where the kid is. Then we kind of get an epilogue. Do you want to cover this one? It's not much.
Yeah, it's this is kind of where the art took a bit of a dip for me. I guess you're right. As he does Spider-Man, it doesn't work quite as well. And the interesting thing is, like, you've got a semi... Okay, so the issue kind of starts off with some news stories being read. Spider-Man's making a cameo. There's a Clark Kent-type person reading some news about Mysterio on the TV, while Peter and MJ are getting ready for a funeral, the funeral being that for Karen Page. Now, people in attendance are like the Thing. I believe Doctor Strange is there. As I said, Peter Parker is going to be there. But the fact that even the Fantastic Four are present would kind of lead you to question, okay, just how important was Karen Page, and was she really just a regular person?
Now, not to diminish your nerd cred on this one, but publicly, Matt Murdock was the attorney for the Fantastic Four.
It's a leap.
She was a heavy part of their firm.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I still think it's a huge leap. that you'd have that, but so be it. I do like that you've got Stan kind of being present in there as well.
Who's anyway, next to Stan? I feel like that's also supposed to be somebody, but I couldn't figure it out.
I would want to say Ditko, but I don't know for sure.
Maybe.
Who is the creator of Daredevil? See, that I don't know. My nerd cred completely goes out the window on that one.
I thought it was Kirby, but...
It might be. I'll keep going while you look that up. So anyway, Matt decides that he's going to give this huge speech, and he's prepared this huge eulogy, and ends up, all he ends up saying is just that he misses her. And he has that moment, and
sorry to interrupt you. It's it was not Kirby, and I apologize, but it was Bill Everett, and it's very clearly Bill Everett when I see a picture of him.
Okay, Bill Everett. There you go. So it's Stan and Bill Everett. Where was I? Oh yeah, so Matt and Spider-Man end up having these conversations, and it kind of just reinstills Matt's belief in doing the right thing and kind of what they're doing. He also goes to visit Black Widow to apologize.
I do want to say one thing about that scene that you were with Spider-Man.
Yeah,
is that in the whole scene, Daredevil's kind of just shouting off we make no difference. Everything's shitty. What's the point? And then Spider-Man just says quietly, you saved the baby girl. And then he's like, think about that. And he's like, gotta go.
Yeah.
That's why Spidey's the best.
That's why Spidey's awesome. Because you do make change. You make every small thing is an important thing. Matt, obviously that kind of lands with him, and he starts to think more about it. Goes to visit Natasha. She punches him in the face. Basically tells him that he's always had shitty experience with women. But if he ever does anything like that again, she'll end up really beating the hell out of him.
I believe she said she'd jam his the bridge of his nose into his brain.
Yeah. And then she's basically, I think really alluding to the fact that she's game if he is. Still kinda interested in a bit of a booty call.
She's very provocative, that one.
And so Nelson has obviously, Foggy has been released from prison because of all of the charges have been dropped, because obviously it wasn't him and that actually hurt that woman. But neither one of them is working at the current law firm. So they've found an empty yard where they're deciding that they're going to build a new firm, Nelson and Murdoch, yet again. I feel like that is probably the most consistent storyline that happens in Daredevil, is that he loses a law firm and then they relaunch their law firm.
It does feel like that, doesn't it?
It's kind of one of those things. Ends up doing it.
It's kind of it's shit or get off the pot with it. Either destroy it or bring it back for good.
Every Star Trek movie has the Enterprise getting blown up, and by the next one, it's back. Every major run of Daredevil has something happening with the law firm, it completely falling apart. Him and Foggy having a huge falling out, and then ends with them, we're going to restart the firm.
Well, Zdarsky, I'll give him credit, so far hasn't done that trope yet. He's changed his career. That being said, many runs have done that, and then they reset to the status quo at some point.
Yes.
But I kind of like the new career.
It makes sense as his new career.
Because doesn't make sense for him to be an attorney anymore.
No, it doesn't.
Daredevil at this point has been the mayor. He's been the district attorney. He's been exposed. His identity's been exposed three times. I think that he's probably best doing what he's doing now as a parole officer.
Mm-hmm. So much as the start of the whole storyline was him going into a confession, it ends with him going into a confession, but not being able to finish, because as you know, Daredevil's always listening and there's always something that he's got to do.
This looks like a job for.
Yeah, exactly. So it ends with him swinging away again with his spaghetti lining off of his billy club.
I think there's a mistake here in the artwork. What's that thing on his face where his teeth are showing?
Oh, a big smile, yeah.
Superheroes aren't supposed to smile and be happy.
This is Marvel, they're allowed to. It's DC,
oh,
they're not allowed
right,
to be happy.
Right. Oh, they aren't run by DiDio. Sorry.
Yeah. So they perfectly, they're allowed to be happy in the Marvel universe.
Dead girlfriend, no problem.
No problem. Put on a happy face. So yeah, so that's the end of the Guardian Devil storyline.
So to keep it brief, how do you feel about this? What would you give this in terms of scores?
When I was first reading it, and I thought that this was just going to be, because I don't remember finishing the storyline when it was first being published, mm-hmm. When it was just kind of this, you know, Second Coming / Antichrist storyline, I was really unimpressed and not into it. But then the reveal of Mysterio, I thought it was great. I thought it was a great little twist. I would give this maybe I'd give it a 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really great Daredevil story. It gives you a good background on who Daredevil is and a good grounding on the character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the art's obviously fantastic throughout. So yeah, I think a 4 out of 5 is 4 out of 5 Billy Clubs.
Well, it's a solid relaunch of a character in a new grittier imprint. I'm gonna say, I feel like Kevin Smith was inspired by Scooby Doo with this one. Now that sounds far fetched, right? But think about it. It's like this like supernatural mystery that is set up at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
only to be revealed when the mask is pulled off and it's revealed to be Mysterio, you know, like, which is not an insult. It's a trope that works.
Mm-hmm. But it's a Mysterio story.
It's very much, that's very much the layout of a Scooby-Doo
yep.
storyline. So, well, surprise, it's not really supernatural. There's a master of illusion behind everything. So, yeah, I would give this 4 out of 5. 4 Nelson and Murdoch's law firms being reinstated yet again out of 5.
Very good. I like that. Yeah, so it's a solid story. It still holds up. Kevin Smith did a great job on this one. Thoroughly impressed.
I would love to compare and like our thoughts on this and Quiver.
Yeah, it made me want to read Quiver again. That's how much I enjoyed this. To be like, does that still hold up as well? Because I remember really enjoying that one, at least at the start.
Well, we'll find out. Not next episode.
Some other time.
All right, so we're going to move on, and like Scott said, we're going to just kind of fold X-Mansion into the pick of the week. It wasn't my pick of the week this week, but I have that's because I have nerd reasons for that. But it was a solid book, and without, you know, spoilers, obviously, so we had been last shown that the X-Men valiantly sacrificed their lives to take down the Mother Mold. And Professor X shed a tear and said no more. Well, we find out what he meant by that, because with the combined powers of 5 different mutants and his own Cerebro technology, he resurrects them all immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got a call back to the first, I think the first 2 pages of the original House of X.
To me, my X-Men.
Yes.
As they're birthed out of little weird pods.
Yes. So we finally get the conclusion to what those pods were and what was going on in that scene.
Yeah.
I will say this is actually my pick of the week.
Fair enough.
For no other reason than it's actually stuck with me the entire week. For good or bad, do I agree with every decision that was made in this? No.
How did he clone Wolverine's adamantium, Scott?
Yes, I know. That is the probably the biggest glaring issue.
I will
issue.
Not settle until I see an on-page, on-panel explanation from Hickman himself
in
as to
one of the data pages.
How he's not in a data page. Fuck, it's like he hears me and like he doubles it. Like this was insane number of data pages this week.
yeah.
I read them begrudgingly. But no, it was a very good issue. I just have real qualms about that. And specifically, it takes away the stakes. If Xavier Cerebro can just copy all their minds weekly, I guess like there's room for gaps, hinting at possible villainous and dark shenanigans that could go on with that.
There's a lot of loopholes in it. There's a lot of loopholes in it because it even talks about, you know, not having and this is probably one of the issues where you have to actually read the data pages because they are so deeply ingrained in the actual progression of the story.
But see, that's the thing is, if you need this many data pages to explain your story, this isn't just one page like Fantastic Four had. This is like page after page, and
I know.
Like it's
I know,
much.
But
it's
there's a lot of implications in this one. There's the whole, you know, the ethics of cloning people and bringing them back. There's the whole,
like, we already know it's not ethical.
the cult aspect of this whole thing of them chanting mutants and referring to each other as brothers and sisters. Like, it's a very strange vibe that's on the go. You've got
no offense, Scott, if you were killed tomorrow and Professor X here resurrected you and downloaded your brain, I still wouldn't see Scott 2.0 as you.
But you wouldn't know the difference.
I feel like I would, because I knew you died.
I came back.
There's a delay. It doesn't happen right away. It takes a while to grow you in a little birthing pod.
Yeah, it does. It takes a little while, but... Still, I mean, it's got that. We've got the White Queen, or Emma Frost. I think she doesn't go by White Queen right now. But Emma Frost is out there, and she's using her powers to manipulate the vote to give Krakoa...
And Xavier's down with it.
...sovereignty, and Xavier doesn't have an issue with it, which, again, is very interesting. There's things that are good and things that are bad about the issue. And the reason it's my pick of the week is because it literally stuck with me the whole time. And there are things like, okay, how did Wolverine get his adamantium back? Is this really Professor Xavier? Because this is really creepy what's on the go.
Moira X has fucked things up pretty bad.
But when we've seen him in other flashbacks, he's still been in his wheelchair and now he's up and about walking around. So is he in a cloned body and is something else on the go here?
I figured he must have downloaded himself into the next body.
He must have, but like we haven't seen that play out yet.
Now, I do want to bring up one vital thing here, right? So that he very much makes the point to say that he does the backups every week. So it's not a perfect copy.
Yeah.
Which means, like, what kind of missions has he sent them on that they don't know about?
Yep.
And that's the part I was thinking about. I'm like, you little fucker. Like, this is going back to, like, Sneaky Charles from back in the day. Like, he's never been squeaky clean.
No. Like, Charles is ultimately the greatest villain that the X-Men have ever faced. I don't think there's any getting around that. But,
like, yeah. I'm just like... Oh man, like what has he sent them to do that they would not be okay with? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then
making an allegiance with Apocalypse at the end, like, and all the other villains that they've run into. I think this is
interesting and it's awesome, but it's dark, man. And
oh yeah.
I'm not sold that this is the X-Men. I'm not sold this is like who we're going to be with once the series starts going.
Yeah,
and I find it hard to believe that they would show, like, you know, unless they're just really doing the resurrection thing to kind of, and just like thinking, well, the average reader's not going to care 10 issues from now, which is kind of how they got away with like Spider-Man's death and all these other kind of characters that kind of brought back through cloning shenanigans. I don't know. To me, the X-Men are dead, kind of. This is like the X-Men 2.0.
I think this is...
And maybe that's intentional. Like, that's what they kind of want.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like freeing them of the burdens of past continuity and whatnot. But then if you can just kill and reboot, reset them, like, it kind of minimizes it gets rid of the stakes.
It does. I won't disagree with that. You and I were talking about it offline. It totally removes the stakes. And after I had read it, I was like, I don't know that I actually enjoyed that, but God damn it. Just, it fucking sticks with me. And I have to know more about what's actually going on and what the ramifications are and where the fuck is Moira. We've only seen her in the flashbacks. We haven't seen her again yet. We know that she's had the big powers of 10 kind of big reveal where she found out about Nimrod and then died. And that's what kind of sent them to that mother mold. But where is she now and what is she doing? And fuck.
Yeah. That last page though, too, like,
and it basically,
Apocalypse and Xavier shaking hands and the smiles on their faces. Like, it's like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So dark. And there's only 3 issues to go.
There's 2 issues to go.
No powers. There's Powers of X, Powers of 10, 5, and
oh, right, 6,
and House of 10, X
5.
So, yeah, like, this might not be the final timeline. We don't know yet. But it could be.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, basically, all the mutants are granted the same powers as Moira with these new birthing pod type things. So.
That's
very interesting. Yeah, very interesting.
It's deep. I'll give you that. So what would you score this book?
Well, I would give it a 4 out of 5 only because it's got some of those glaring things like, okay, Wolverine's back, but really he would only come back with his bone claws. He wouldn't come back with the adamantium because, you know, nerd logic. And then we've got, just the complete moral ambiguity of Xavier right now. And he looks so much like the Maker that it's troubling.
sees the little smirks and everything, like, it's,
and the whole cultish aspect to it doesn't feel right to me. Doesn't feel like an X-Men comic, but goddamn, like I say, it's 4 out of 5, but it just stuck with me. Out of everything else that I read, this just stuck with me.
Chuck, you slimy bastard.
Oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
So if this wasn't your pick of the week, what was your pick of the week?
Flash forward, number one. No, I'm just kidding. I've bounced around a couple of them. There's a couple of books, and I considered House of X as one of the picks of the week, but it just, like, my nerd issues with it kind of hold that back. I really enjoyed Absolute Carnage number 3, but it wasn't quite my pick of the week.
I think I know what my pick is.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to guess then. Go ahead.
I think your pick of the week is going to be Superman 15.
You would be right, sir. Yeah, I'm a sucker. I held on for this. Not every issue in this run has made it easy.
Mm-hmm.
But damn, that resolution to Jor-El was such it was so savage.
Yeah.
But kind of touching at the same time.
I like that the
council and everything decided like to what they were going to do with him while Superman wasn't paying attention.
Yes. And then they did it, and they just did it. It's like, we're going to send him back in time and put him back in his timeline. Although it's not really back in his timeline, but
no, it's like straight execution.
Yeah.
They send him to the moments of Krypton's destruction, which is dark. Mm-hmm. It's really dark. But there's like a little icing that they throw into it to make it kind of almost like a touching moment, because he's not only sent back to the moment of Krypton's destruction, he's sent to where he and his wife are have accepted their death and are gonna about to die. Mm-hmm. And even if he doesn't understand the context, he does, and he shouts to his younger self. He does it. He brings the universe together. He does it. And then boom, there goes Krypton.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, that I didn't think like that's how they were gonna resolve this character. And I liked it a lot. I surprisingly liked the Zod part too. Like where Zod and Superman kind of come to terms with each other, and Zod is like kind of inspired by this the moment as well, and decides that he's gonna try and, you know, start up a new Kryptonian settlement, a new Krypton. The Supergirl joke was pretty funny about the babies.
Yeah,
she's like, how many babies do you plan on having? Because it's literally his family. But you know, like, I thought it was cool. I like the Superman like telling him not to like ruin the name of Krypton too. I thought this was as well an ending as you could have had to this whole Unity saga. I like the throwbacks to the fucking classic Richard Donner Superman when Jor-El's under like I guess on trial and it's got the like the glowing rings suspending him in the spot.
Yeah,
like that's straight out of the Donner movies. The interaction with Adam Strange and Superman where I thought it was like a little jarring because I'm like I didn't know they were close.
Oh, with the hug?
Yeah, but I was okay with it. Like it just it threw me for a second. I'm excited at the prospect of Superboy going away.
Yeah, there's one thing I want to call out on the big page where he's screaming Unity Day. Yeah. I want you to look at Crypto and tell me he doesn't look like a goat.
He does look like a goat. His dog-like features have disappeared and he's got like a goat face. Or a human-goat hybrid.
Yeah. It's.
But he's one excited pup.
He's one excited farm animal. Yeah.
I'm not convinced that all the like the worlds of the, of the galaxy would just be like okay with like creating a UN, but hey, it had to happen somewhere.
Yeah.
The Legion. I'm really excited for Bendis's Legion because I've always kind of thought he would be a good voice for that kind of a book.
Mm-hmm.
Just with my past experiences with reading Legion, like. He's just definitely it's either him or Jeff Johns is who I would have wanted to see writing that book and
yeah.
For getting one of them.
Yeah.
Because Legion, it's about fun, like and like being inspired to be better. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. And I'm curious to see what he's gonna do with John Kent Superboy.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of hoping that John Kent would meet Connor Kent before he goes off to the future, and maybe that still happens. I don't know. But I'm all around, I'm pretty excited for that, where this book is branching off to, and I'm curious to see where he goes next with the book. That said, the rumors that are that have come out about where Superman's going next, not so sure on, so we'll see.
Yeah, I am just happy that Rogelzar's gone. At you least for the now? Foreseeable
he's just
future.
Floating. He's just floating in a red energy field.
If they bring him back in 2 issues, I will not be reading Superman for a very long time.
I think you're safe that he's not going to be back for a couple, at least a year, I think.
I hope he doesn't come back for a very long time.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, so what rating would you give this?
I would give this 4 Billy Goats out of 5.
Four super goats.
Wearing red capes.
That's awesome. That's great.
Now, with this being Terminal Velocity and us being Wally fans, I thought we should just briefly say our quick thoughts on Flash Forward number 1.
Okay. So I did read it. I decided to do that despite the whole from the pages of Heroes in Crisis. I hope to Christ they don't turn Wally West into the new Metron. I'm
thinking the exact same thing.
I don't know that we need another one of these cosmic creatures that have been around since the dawn of fucking time that have seen all of the various crises that have been on the go. I really don't want more of this dark universe bleeding through into things. I got real fucking fed up with that just reading Dark Knight's Metal. It had its place kind of in the story, but I don't need us revisiting it. Ultimately, it was an okay issue. There was nothing that was horrendously terrible about it. Yeah. But it's I don't know that it's a story that we need to be seeing. And I don't know. And I don't like that they're just giving him his other costume back. I think they need to give him a better costume.
I was hoping that he would get his Flash costume with the dome helmet, like with the nose and everything. Like I was hoping that they would do that.
So was I. I mean, I know the cover is telling you that that's not going to happen, but I really wanted them. If you're gonna give him a fresh restart, then you know, give him something different. So we'll see. I mean, this is going to be another one of these, like heroes lost in time in the multiverse, and how is he going to get back, and how is he going to fix things type of story. So
I'm kind of hoping that a crisis happens that resets everything to one world again.
I don't know. I like the multiverse. I like those aspects to it. I don't have that.
They're so irresponsible with it.
they use it as a MacGuffin far too often on different things. So I'll be curious to see what the next issue is like. I'm not in high anticipation for it.
See that this could be a means of them absolving Wally, and I really hope that that's what they do. I know that it's a cop out, a cheap way to deal with it, but I don't care. Mm-hmm. It should never have happened to begin with.
Yeah,
I know that with him facing the dark multiverse and all this other shit, like it should reveal that like what happened in Heroes in Crisis was a direct relation to whatever he's having to deal with here.
Yeah, yeah, because basically they just make it out like his connection to the Speed Force is so unstable that it could kill anybody at any time.
Which is absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, which is not, which makes
absolutely especially because no at sense. The time the Speed Force was broken, so
yeah,
fuck off.
Yeah. Hyper time traveling through other universes was all broken. So anyway, yeah. What did you think?
Yeah, your thoughts kind of reflect kind of what I felt too. Like I didn't think that it was the worst thing, but it was definitely it wasn't like great either. Like. Mm-hmm. I hope the series just achieves what it needs to achieve to fix Wally, so that he can not you can go forward with him without being tainted. And I'm a sucker because I love Wally West, so I followed him to this storyline. I'm hoping that it can continue beyond that.
Okay. Now you did mention already Absolute Carnage number 3, and I bring this one up because we both like Donny Cates, and we've both actually been enjoying Absolute Carnage, which is, you know, I'm surprised I was able to actually get that out of my mouth, because it's so heavy in the symbiotes and everything. But what did you think of this issue?
Absolute Carnage number 3.
Yeah.
I've been really enjoying the series. Now they did hint that there was like this big reveal going to happen in issue 3 and you won't believe it and blah, blah, blah. And I'll be honest that hype didn't live up. Like it didn't live up to that hype for me.
Yeah.
That like, cause I don't know. For some reason, I feel like the Hulk's personality should be able to reject a symbiote.
Yeah, I would assume that just his
like its gamma powered body should be able to just like basically burn like it blast out. It off, right? Like
yeah,
especially Immortal Hulk, which I still don't fully. I guess I got to read that book to kind of understand what the hell's going on with the character. Mm-hmm. But it's shocking, you know, like the symbiote just abandons Eddie again for a stronger host because it's got a bloodlust going on right now for Carnage. I thought it was cool. I don't know about the design. It didn't like blow me away or anything like that, but I'm still on board.
Huge Venom.
Yeah, basically.
Except it doesn't fully cover his body.
Like, I'm pretty sure the Hulk ate Venom once, so... So we'll see how this goes. But, yeah, still a cool series.
Yeah. They're kind of going apeshit with it, which is kind of the fun part.
Yeah, I just love that. That's what I kind of enjoy about Donny Cates' writing, is that he just goes balls to the wall with whatever he wants to tell. And it's like, you can tell he's having fun writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, he's writing comics.
Yeah.
It's not some like horror, like a deep deconstruction of something and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just, he's telling fun stories and going as crazy as he can with the toolbox that he's, or the toy box that he's got. So yeah, they met their goal of outselling X-Men number one, apparently, which I thought was cool. I feel like there's not as much noise about this series as I thought there would be.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, no, it was good. It was a solid issue.
Cool. Yeah, I was going to say, is there anything else from the week that you want to talk about?
I'm only going to mention it just because I feel like I have to be unbiased and fair.
Okay.
I did read Tom King's and Clayman's issues of Batman, like I said I would, number 78 and 79. And I don't know how to say this, but I didn't hate it, which is a huge improvement from what I was feeling in the last several story arcs. He got me because it's a whole Batman Catwoman story. Like, that's the part that got me. It kind of fixed, or it depends on your view of things. Like, because, like, in one hand, Batman should tell her to go take a hike,
mm-hmm.
but on the other hand, it's comics, and they both understand came to an understanding of what was going down and that they were being manipulated and blah, blah, blah. He's still overdoing the whole cat, bat, was it the boat? Was it this? Well, they've resolved that. It's both. Shocking. It was the boat, but they met on the streets before the bat and the cat, and then they met on the boat as bat and the cat. So, okay, semantics. We're getting to the crux, I think, of the story. So Batman has mentally emotionally and physically healed through Catwoman nurturing him back to health, through vacationing, which is kind of funny to hear, through exercise and through kicking or crime fighting locally. And the issue ends with like them kind of they've reestablished their relationship. And they feel that they've resolved the whole concept of Batman not being able to be happy. He's like, he now realizes being happy and whatever enhances his mission. So the story ends with them kind of prepared to go to war with Bane. Now, there is one thing I wanted to mention in the latest issue is that, can't remember if it was 78 or 79, but it makes mention of the Alfred situation and the Damian situation. So it kind of mentions that Bruce got word from Alfred that he's safe and sent Damian in. We don't see any of this on panel, so I don't know, like, did he really hear from Alfred?
Mm-hmm.
Or was he kind of being manipulated, like they faked a message or whatever from Alfred? So it's hard to say still what their plan is, if the whole Alfred thing is a fake out or not. We will see soon enough, but it's still not enough to redeem the book, and I wouldn't say to you, like, hey, Scott, man, you gotta like jump back in. It's picking up. It fixed. It's backtracked on some of the things that that bothered me with where it went off the rails. But I feel like if you can find it within yourself to ignore issue 51 to 70, 7,
oh my god,
then maybe you wouldn't notice. You wouldn't have much of an issue here. But yeah, the damage is done, and I don't think that this arc can have that conclusion. That, you know, with that oomph, that impact that you want it to have. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not. I will continue to torture myself to see where it goes.
Fair enough. If you do that for us, I would appreciate it, because I won't be reading it until the news story. I just can't do it.
And that's fair. I almost couldn't. If these two issues had have been total crap, then I probably would have. I don't know if I could have kept going. At this point now, there's what, 5 issues left? 6 issues?
6, I think.
Yeah, so double ship. Yeah, so it's about 6 issues. I've hung on for worse. So
a ringing endorsement.
I'm trying to be fair. Honestly, the book has burned me, right? So I'm eating a lot of crow here to say I didn't mind these last 2 issues.
Yeah. I have been laughing every time I get a text about it, where you're like, I read the Batman issue and I didn't hate it. I was like, oh no.
I didn't love it either. Yeah. So, yeah, I am also curious for, James Tynion's, run that you've just announced, that, Tynion will be taking over Batman at issue number 86, but we'll continue with, Tony Daniel on art. I know it's a bit topical for the show, but I just wanted to know your, or I guess for the show, what your thoughts are on that.
I haven't read at least too much of Tynion that I can recall on its own. So I'll be curious to see how he handles specifically just the Batman, characters. I think he did a part of the run on Detective a long time ago.
I believe he launched the Rebirth era Detective.
And it wasn't too bad, but it wasn't Batman.
It was more about the Bat family too, right? It was focused on the co-stars.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what got us some of the, like Clayface involved with it, with Batgirl and Batwoman, and Tim was at least in it and that kind of thing. But I don't think it was too heavy on Batman itself. So I'll be curious what he comes up with. Based on some of the art that I've seen from Daniel in the most recent issues, I haven't been thoroughly impressed. I thought his Joker looked really, really weird. And I don't know. If we can just get away from Mutton Chops, Riddler, I'll be really happy if we can get back to Riddler looking like the Riddler.
Well, in Year of the Villain, Riddler number 1, he's given up being the Riddler.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. I'm kind of burnt out on the whole concept of the Batman title right now, because of Nightmares really just burned me out on the book. So
as it did many, it was literally, I think that arc, I want to phrase myself carefully, because I tend to rant on the book, like on the show, mostly for fun, but like it's also people's hard work, and I don't discount how much work was probably put into it, but I think it got lost. Like, I think they lost their way during that arc, and especially with it being broken up by the price as well, didn't help things.
Yeah, I think that was really detrimental to it.
So, yeah, like I think that editorial should have stepped in on that one, and that should have been a 3-issue arc max. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it ended up being this like 7-issue spread out with an additional 2 interrupting it. And it really, I think that arc was the kind of the death blow for many people who were reading this title. Mm-hmm. If you had to cut that out, plus like, you know, what they did with Dick Grayson too in issue 55, and there's deconstruction and then there's just destroying things, and well, it remains to be seen if it's destroyed. I'm curious to see what sales are going to be like on Tynion's first issue.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the last issue of King's Run will be a top seller, and Tinian's first issue will be a top seller.
These last couple issues have gone to second printing, so it's still selling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I can't...
Tom King's cautiously optimistic.
It's a double-edged sword with Tom King. Like, he did Nightmares, and that really hurt.
Yeah.
But he also did Mr. Miracle and Vision, and most of this fucking run I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I was singing his praises probably, 4 months ago.
Yep.
So, you know, I hope that he gets to, like, his conclusion is as solid as he intended. I hope to God that Bane is put to rest after this arc. Like, if Bane shows up in Batman Catwoman, like, I don't know what I'm going to say. So I hope it's done. I hope Bane's put to rest for a good decade after this.
Yeah, me too. I'm cautiously optimistic about Tinian's run.
I'm optimistic. He said some of the right things so far. This is kind of sounds like it's his passion project. Mm-hmm. That he's dreamed about. He wants to get back to telling core Bruce Wayne Batman stories that, like, pushes him to the edge. That part kind of makes me nervous because I thought that's what we're getting right now.
Yeah, like, I don't want any more push to the edge. I just want some fun detective adventures. He crumbled.
Yeah, I want to see creepy, solid, like, mysteries. I want to see gothic detective stories. I want to see positive interactions with the Bat family. I'm not saying he has to completely ignore what happens with King, because, like, I like continuity in books, but mm-hmm. I want him to kind of step forward with it.
I want a really good Scarecrow story. I want a really good Man-Bat story.
Well, hopefully all the villains aren't neutered by the end of this
story. Yeah, and I would love to have just a regular crime story. Where he's not going after supervillains and that kind of thing, where he's actually just solving crimes.
I would really, really like to have a mystery. That being said, I don't want big, long, drawn-out mysteries. Yes. Like, I don't need another 12-issue arc of anything. No.
I want 2 issues at most.
2-3 at the most if it's a really good one.
Yeah. But I would love a bunch of one
and done. Cut the fat. We don't need any filler. We don't need any fat in this one. We just need to get good, solid Batman stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
And where he's not being a total asshole and beating his kids. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Okay. So I think that is a good length for a show.
We've been running long.
Well, we were gone for a week, so
so we're making
bonus content. Anyways, I guess you could take it off from here.
Okay. So, if you want to send us a comment or question, you can email us at terminalvelocitypodcast@gmail.com or leave a ratings on iTunes or a star rating on your podcatcher of choice. It'll help other people find us. That's a great way to interact with us as well.
You can also follow us at Comics Terminal on Twitter and Terminal Velocity Podcast on all the other social media outlets. Just reach out, let us know what you think, and thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks very much, and we will see you next time.
Take care.